This is Cheetos flavor swap. So I guess this is the thing that Lay's is doing, like I said, where they're swapping around their flavor powder dust from one product to another.
Sure.
So here we've got Cheetos with sweet Southern Heat barbecue, where, as I said earlier, I also saw, like, Doritos with sour cream and cheddar dust on them. This is someone named Madison Beer, who I had to look up.
Oh, that's singer. Yeah.
Okay, I had no idea who she was at all. Still don't. But she's gracing the front of my bag of Cheetos.
No offense to her, but she's kind of like a C-plus to B-minus list performer.
She says, Lay's Sweet Southern Heat Barbecue Flavor on Crunchy Cheetos, the perfect tour snack.
I'm sure so she good. Said that. I'm sure she said that.
She says that all the time. I looked her up on Instagram. She says this. Yeah, I am. Mm. They certainly smell like the chips which bear their name.
Hmm. No instant regret.
Is there something kind of styrofoamy about it?
That's yeah, just Cheetos.
Because you expect a crunch and you're getting a puff.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I just don't think God intended this to go together.
It's kind of neither nor, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, there's a cheesiness, there's a barbecue-iness, but they're kind of...
Well, there's not a cheesiness. That's the thing, because I don't think there's any cheese
there
in this.
There isn't any cheese in
it. I think it's just the barbecue dust, because Cheetos themselves are not inherently cheesy. They're just corn club
just
things.
Corn.
Yeah.
True.
So
here's a hot take.
Yeah?
Give me a dust bar. Give me a DIY.
Make your own.
Make your own.
Dust your own Cheeto.
Honestly,
DIY Lay's.
That's not the worst idea.
Build a Lay's.
What you say? Okay. It's like what are you talking about?
Wait. You have to cut this out of the episode so that we can monetize this. We're gonna take dust bars on the road, baby.
Give me a dust bowl.
You get like you pick your chip base and then you pick your dust.
And then you dust it.
And you dust it, and you got your...
Get a little feather duster.
It goes into, like, a fancy machine that, like, shakes it up real good.
All right, so that's a definite beat it. We're all going to jerk off on these, right?
Yeah, right now.
Right now. Hands off, Jets.
Lee, you're welcome.
It doesn't work that way for me.
No, it's... I have a pretty good understanding of the female anatomy. I mean, that's how it does.
Let us tell you about that.
Yeah, look, hey, don't worry, darling. I'm going to tell you how to do this. I'm going to tell you how sexual pleasure works.
Of Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends sit down with a troubled movie and a themed cocktail, and then after they finish watching it, talk about what worked, what didn't, and how they would fix it. I am Chris. Splish Splash, who's ready for summer? Ravel.
I'm Lee. Charge that. Delahanty.
And I am Brendan. Some worries, darling. Trishner.
We had to riff on the title somehow. If you couldn't tell by Brendan's nickname, we did... 2023's Don't Worry, Darling.
Don't Worry, Darling.
Directed by Olivia Wilde, starring Florence Pugh,
Harry Styles, Olivia Wilde,
Chris Pine,
Gemma Chan. That's kind of it. I mean, like
Timothy Simons.
Yeah, like Nick Kroll, Kiki Lane. Like, there are other people in here, but like.
What's his face? Asif Ali.
Yeah. You're getting into the
we're gonna get
here,
out yeah
none of these guys
oh
matter.
Paper Land, she's in there, she's got
yeah
legs.
Yeah 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 she is not Catherine Hahn
she...
even though I really thought she was for about the first 15 minutes.
It's a shame because I don't think the movie would even have space for Catherine Hahn to make this a different
thing. No, not
you
at
know,
all.
It's not as if there would have been a way for her to run away with it.
No.
There's a lot to kind of riff on and talk about with this movie, but before we get there, what drink did we use to fortify ourselves to get through this experience in the Victory Project?
The drink that we made for Don't Worry, Darling is called The Good Girl. It's 1.5 ounces of cardamom gin, 1 ounce of sweet vermouth, 1 ounce of blood orange juice, and an orange. To make the cardamom-infused gin, you pour the gin into a large clean container with a seal, add the cardamom pods, crush them slightly before adding them to the container. I used about 15 cardamom pods because that seemed like it would be a good amount. Tightly close the lid and store in a cool place for at least 24 hours, preferably over a week, before serving. When you're making the cocktail itself, add the gin and the sweet vermouth to a cocktail shaker with ice, shake until chilled, strain into a martini glass, slowly pour blood orange juice over a spoon to create a layer effect, and garnish with an orange slice. The layer effect didn't work. I'm not really sure why. I know that I'm not particularly good at making a layered thing, so it might have just been that. So it all just kind of, it was already a fairly orange, ambery kind of drink, and then it just became more orange.
More red. Yes. More kind of like a red-orange.
Yes, when the juice was added to it. But that is the Good Girl.
What do we think?
Delicious.
It was good.
Yeah.
It was very cardamom-y, which I'm not complaining about. I imagine if you don't like cardamom, you might not like this, but I thought it was a nice change of pace.
I mean, we are a cardamom household here. We're a pro-cardamom podcast.
Yes.
We also have to because we have a lot of it.
Yes, I have so much cardamom, we have to use it all. So we will not rest until we've used the rest of my bag of cardamom.
This is going to sound confusing, but so I think cardamom in general is sort of a more subtle flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this had like really pronounced cardamom flavor without it feeling like it was too much.
It did. It did have very pronounced cardamom flavor. I think if you wanted to scale that back, obviously you could just use less cardamom pods in your infusion. But as I said, it was fine by me, so I didn't really care. Mm.
Had a nice peppery bite.
Yes, it did. It did. So it was a nice variation on the normal martini, I think. A little
messed up.
Yeah.
Little weird.
It was what I think a martini would taste like if I was living in some sort of simulation where my husband had clamped on some eye sockets to me and had to drizzle drops of water into my mouth to prevent me from drying
out. What about
out.
Eye drops? She must need eye drops.
Right, that too. Also, like, was she...
Food?
Was she going to go to the bathroom? Like, you going to have to, like... change her? Like,
I mean,
what's...
just if we're gonna get that real, isn't she gonna menstruate at some point?
That's gonna gross him out. He's gonna be like, ooh, keep away.
Listen, we won't think about this too hard.
Yeah, that's right.
God knows they didn't.
Right,
when
the creative
they made
team
the movie.
Didn't, so neither will we.
Before we go any further into this movie, Brendan, I believe you have our summary pulled up from our good friend Wikipedia.
That I do, Chris. Alice and Jack Chambers live in Victory, California, an idyllic 1950s desert company town. Every day, the men leave for work at Victory headquarters in the surrounding desert. Their wives enjoy luxuries and leisure while the men are gone. Alice spends her days with the other wives, including her best friend, Bunny. Fellow resident Margaret has become estranged from the community. An unauthorized desert visit resulted in her son's apparent death, which caused her mental breakdown. Margaret insists Victory took him as punishment for breaking the rules. Victory's founder Frank hosts a party where Alice sees Margaret's husband attempt to medicate her after an outburst. Alice and Jack then have sex in Frank's home as Frank watches, unbeknownst to Jack. From the trolley, Alice sees a plane crash into the desert, so she rushes to help. Stumbling onto headquarters, she touches one of its mirror-like windows, experiencing surreal hallucinations about another life, waking up at home that night. Alice continues to have increasingly strange experiences or hallucinations. Soon after, she sees Margaret slit her own throat and fall from her roof. Men in red jumpsuits drag Alice away, preventing her from reaching Margaret's body. Jack dismisses Alice's claims, insisting Margaret is simply recovering from a household accident. While Alice asks him what is really happening to the Victory Project, he becomes angry and refuses to answer. The town physician, Dr. Collins, prescribes Alice medication, which she and Jack decline. She steals Margaret's medical file from his briefcase and finds it heavily redacted. Becoming increasingly paranoid during a company celebration promoting Jack, Alice breaks down in the bathroom. Confronted by Bunny, she attempts to explain her suspicions. Bunny reacts angrily when Alice tells her she went to headquarters, accusing her of jeopardizing their livelihood and Victory, like Margaret. Alice and Jack invite neighbors to dinner, including Frank and his wife, Shelley. Frank privately confirms her suspicions and dares her to challenge him. So, Alice attempts to expose him, but he makes her appear delusional to everyone, causing Jack grief. Afterwards, Alice tries to tell Jack what Frank said, but he rebukes her. Desperate, she begs him to leave Victory with her. He feigns agreement, then lets Frank's men take her away. Dr. Collins gives Alice electroshock therapy, during which she sees herself in the 21st century as surgical resident Alice Warren and living with the unemployed Jack. After treatment, Alice resumes her life in Victory, but soon deduces the visions are actually memories. Confronted by Alice, Jack confesses the truth. Victory is a simulated world created by Frank, where he and the other men lead their vision of perfect lives. The women they have in the simulation are unaware that everything in Victory, including their children, is artificial. While the men leave for work each day, they actually log out of the simulation for real jobs to pay for their wives to stay there. Jack argues that Alice was miserable in the real world, while here they can finally be happy. However, Alice is livid that she is there. Jack begs Alice to stay, forcefully grabbing her, prompting her to smash a whiskey tumbler over his head, killing him in both the simulation and reality. Frank immediately hears of Jack's death. Bunny finds Alice and admits she has always known about the simulation, but chose to stay to be with her children who died in real life. She warns Alice she will be killed if she does not get to headquarters, the simulation's exit portal. Alice silently confronts the neighborhood, and as small explosions begin, the husbands panic. Fleeing by car, Alice is chased by Dr. Collins and Frank's men. She maneuvers them into fatally crashing into each other. Meanwhile, Meanwhile, Shelley fatally stabs Frank to take control of Victory. Arriving at headquarters,
I guess?
Alice has a final vision of Jack, then puts her hands on headquarters before Frank's men can reach her. Various romantic scenes mixed with memories and visions of herself in the real world flash, and then the screen cuts to black as Alice gasps for air. So don't worry, darling.
I am so worried, darling.
The cast: Florence Pugh is Alice Warren Chambers. Harry Styles is Jack Chambers, Alice's husband. Olivia Wilde is Bunny, Alice's neighbor and best friend. Gemma Chan is Shelley, Chris Pine's wife. Chris Pine is Frank, the head of the Victory Project. You've also got Nick Kroll, Kate Berlant as other neighbors. Timothy Simons is the doctor, Dr. Collins. You know, the other actors here are just characters who I'm sure we won't even really mention by name because they don't really have much to do. But that's about that.
Wow. Wow, guys. The movie that solved misogyny.
Don't worry.
I think if we're talking about this movie, I think it mainly exists, I would argue, and I don't think this is a novel thing to say, it exists by riffing on other existing movies.
So sure. Like,
the really obvious one right off the top is Stepford Wives, obviously, right?
Right.
But as we were watching this, we were discussing some others. So, like, what else did we think was kind of going into the palette here?
Right. So this is what I had come up with. Stepford Wives, mm-hmm. The Matrix, obviously, mm-hmm. The Truman Show.
Oh, that's a really good one.
Right, because it's definitely about, like, one character questioning their entire reality and everyone else being like, no, despite the fact that most of them are, in fact, in on it.
Right.
Or, I mean, The Truman Show, they're all in on. But anyway, did you ever see A Cure for Wellness?
Yes.
Okay, I say that only in the sense that it's a weird... It's not, but it's a weird conspiratorial-themed movie with a lot of crazy visuals.
That's true.
And I think the thing that I think A Cure for Wellness does better is at least it's, like, all unhinged craziness, whereas this one is just little dips.
Dashes.
Yeah, dips of craziness. And lastly, Get Out, I think, is a big one.
Oh,
this is basically, like, White Lady Get Out.
Mm-hmm. I feel like a lot of the references to these things really only go skin deep. Like, there's not a lot of grappling with a lot of the actual themes that some of those movies, which I would argue are far better than this, more effectively explore.
Sure. I guess, obviously things like Get Out does this a lot more better and a lot more interesting and is dealing with the concepts at play here in a more interesting fashion. I would say that this is... almost a problem is that it is very similar to the Stepford Wives. Mm-hmm. And the difference, of course, is that the Stepford Wives came out in the 70s. We've had 50 years to sort of take it in. Right. Years of advancements in feminism. You know,
right.
So like the Stepford Wives, I'm not knocking. I still think it's very effective for what it is. But it is a novel or movie set in the 70s with the 70s idea of feminism. So, you know, it ends with like a bleak ending, whereas this one ends with an empowering ending, I guess, where
it fell in the blank.
Yeah, like, we're at least... You know, the leading woman seems to wake up at the end of the movie and is free to sort of, get out of the simulation or whatever.
I know what other movie went through in there.
What?
Inception.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
I think that this movie mainly exists as a riff on these ideas, these concepts. It's clearly, an extended, like, aesthetic exercise, but it frustrates me that it seems like they didn't bother to really put in a story that has much, much meaning. They're not really developing or building upon these ideas very much.
Sure. Chris, did you do any research on this script?
I did a little.
What did you find?
Not very much, aside from the fact that, as you had mentioned earlier at the beginning, that she wrote this with... the person who wrote the screenplay had also worked on Booksmart, which I really enjoyed. In fact, before I saw the movie, I had hopes for this because I thought Booksmart was enjoyable.
So this was a blacklist script written by Dick Van Dyke's grandsons.
Interesting.
I have read the blacklist script of which this movie was based upon because I was curious.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's a good script. I would say it's a better script. It's a script that still needed several more drafts. It's a script that also desperately needed a female creative personage to come in and sort of help them with things, which my understanding was when the brothers who wrote the script had, like, found out that it was going to be rewritten, they were just sort of like, yeah, that's fine. Like, that makes sense. Like, it makes sense that you would want to have a woman come in and be like, here's some things that you might miss on being a guy. The thing that the blacklist version of this script does better is page 20, she finds out she's in a simulation. She wakes up out of the simulation several times. Almost every other character in the script, or in the movie rather, is not in the script. The only characters really in the script are the Harry Styles analog, the Florence Pugh analog, and a next door neighbor analog who I assume is kind of the Olivia Wilde type character. Sure. Almost anyone else who's in this movie is not in that script. You Damn. Never meet the person who's running this. There is a mayor in one scene. I was like, oh, is the mayor Chris Pine? No, he's in one scene and it does not matter. The fewer questions you answer about this, the easier it is to keep these plates spinning in the air and not get too bogged down into the semantics of what is this and how is this happening. Having read the original version of the script, I think it's easy to see why someone would read this and be like, oh yeah, let's do a couple more takes on this mm-hmm. and get it out there. I would venture to say that almost every change made is a bad change in this version. Almost every update that was made, to me, muddles things considerably more.
So is it just like a way smaller story then?
It is like a 90-page screenplay. So it is much shorter, which again is a big problem that I'm sure I will get into about this movie, is that this movie is fucking two hours and change long. This is like when they expanded Twilight Zone to a full hour and they had to like really struggle to keep the wheels spinning for a full hour because you can't. Because when you have such a simple hook premise mystery, there's only so much padding it can take before the wheels start to come off. And this is something where you are so fucking ahead of this movie. It's the problem mm-hmm. we discussed with The Island. Except The Island had the decency to tell you about 35 minutes in, they're clones living in the middle of the desert. It's not really an island. This movie really fucking milks it for about 90 minutes to the point that I imagine everyone in the audience has, if not quite worked out what it is, has at least come up with the possibility that it is this.
Well, and it's just crazy to go on that long and to punt the reveal that is already obvious, especially if you're going to play the weirdness that close to the surface so soon in the movie, which they do pretty much right away. I think it would behoove you to have the reveal a lot earlier. And then maybe it doesn't feel like such a slog because then there's stuff you can do with that.
This movie, by the way, mm-hmm. is sent, according to this post, is set in 2050, the original version.
The original version is set, yeah, the original screenplay is set in the future when she comes out to the real world.
Which I had a lot of questions about. what is happening?
No, I think I also have a lot of questions. When you ever see when you see the real world in this movie, I do have a lot of
get glimpses.
Right. Yeah. I think to be fair, you could tell me that this is set in 2040 or something, and I would be like, yeah, I guess it is. I wouldn't be surprised if it was.
We don't see anything in there that would mean it's not in the future.
Right.
That futuristic Ludovico method thing is pretty futury.
Sure. Yeah. Right. But yeah, it is. That was that was the other thing I'd forgotten. Is that yes, as you said, it was. In the future when she, in our future, when she wakes up from the machine. These are things that I think we'll probably get to later on, but I think there are questions that I have that come up in this movie that are more effectively explained or not raised at all because you don't think to ask them in the original version of the script.
That's where I wanted to go next, was just let's talk about the world, and there are many holes that we can poke in this, right? I think this movie suffers from the issue of a lot of decisions being made for either aesthetic reasons or because someone thinks it's cool or what they have to do with whatever genre they're trying to play with, but they don't make any internal sense within the world of the movie. It's so weird that a plane crashes.
Right, okay.
Because we're inside the simulation, which means that had to have been simulated within, and two separate people see it.
Right, Margaret sees it,
and
Florence Pugh, Alice sees it. Right.
So, but that also doesn't go anywhere. It's not as if the plane crash was an incursion from the outside world. It's not as if she found...
There's also, the ground shakes.
Yeah, there's like almost like earthquakes that happen periodically, but they're very mild, and everyone's just like, oh, grab your drink.
Oh, the boys?
Right.
The toys.
Yeah, Olivia Wilde's they're doing their job, whatever that is. And
but yeah, if this is my biggest question about all of this stuff, the plane and all this is this is my video game design brain. Mm-hmm. It's what mechanical function does this serve? It's from a reality. Perspective, from a sort of perception of these women and how they perceive reality, it's bad. It's bad to make them want to go into the desert. It's bad to have them think that the earthquake is happening.
I guess my thought would be, and this again, this is me trying to come up with answers, is the earthquake thing is there to scare them, to make them think that
it's dangerous.
Oh, whatever they're doing out there is bad and we shouldn't be out there because it's causing earthquakes. Yeah. It's unsafe to be there. Also, it only happens twice in the movie or something, which is incredibly stupid. You should think it would be happening all the fucking
throughout.
Time. Right, but it doesn't. So anyways, I can kind of explain that away. The plane is the thing that really fucking, much like Alice, broke me.
Let's entertain this way for a second. If the plane is meant to scare them, that's a really stupid choice.
I don't think the plane is meant to scare them.
Because wouldn't that just create more questions?
No, I don't think anyone's suggesting the plane is meant to scare them.
I know, I was just bouncing off what you were saying so if things happen to try to keep them contained, looking at the plane through that possibility, it still doesn't track.
Right, okay, that's true, yes. So here are the possibilities for what the plane could be.
Okay.
Right? One, we have some just sort of weird-ass glitch in the simulation.
Where there's just a plane.
Right, where there is just a plane because Chris Pine apparently is very bad at his job, which we find out later when it turns out that all the women are from only one of three cities and have one of three honeymoon destinations, right. One of three meet-cutes with their husband.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe Chris Pine is just very bad at this. We should not discount that possibility.
How dare you slander the good name of that guy?
I don't think
of
that's
the Kingdom of Roses.
What the movie wants you to think. But I think you could think that. I think the problem then also is you see other weird shit happen to Florence Pugh. Like, she's getting crushed by the window and the wall. The house is physically crushing her. She's cracking open eggs and there's nothing inside them. And so, like, for
that makes more sense.
Right, right. And
except
so, like,
it doesn't, the movie doesn't, then the movie makes it make less sense. But,
right, yes. Yeah, to be fair.
In the beginning, it's like, okay, as a way of, like, seeing through an illusion, cracking an egg and having there be nothing inside is a great, like, well, there's no need to render anything inside.
Right,
an egg,
exactly.
You're like, you're sort of seeing through this illusion of there's an egg in there. I would have liked to have seen her look down and see, oh, the yolk is there. What did I think?
Right, like, oh, was I just distracted or something?
Yeah.
In real life, it's like the simulation isn't caught up to, like, where
yes,
she is.
It's like a lag.
Right, and the simulation is me like, oh shit, there should be three yolks here on this plate right
by
now.
By the way, if you wanted to sell glitches in the simulation, that needed to be all over the place. But it wasn't.
Sure.
The other thing that bugged me about the egg thing, I agree mm-hmm. that would be a good thing. But then we also have scenes where she cracks an egg and it comes out as normal. So is that another
again,
glitch?
I think it's just an occasional thing that happens.
Yeah, like, I don't think it needs to be like all eggs are
okay.
immediately hollow. I think it should be like every now and then something slightly weird happens. Shit, we're really trying to, like, keep up with her right
now.
Like,
sometimes she whacks a pan against the wall and the sound is delayed by, like, a few seconds.
Oh,
right,
cool.
Or she's, like, walking in the town and, like, the buildings are, like, hazy for a second and then become real as she, like, walks
closer.
Like, draw
distance. It's being procedurally
right. Yes, exactly like that sort of shit. So back to the plane, though. My first thought when I saw this, I was like, oh, is there a plane flying close to her body or wherever she is in reality? And this is her subconscious trying to justify what this plane is. But that doesn't make sense, I don't think. I don't think it's that.
See, I don't know if we see Margaret seeing the actual plane, but she, like, goes out into the desert and picks up
a
toy version.
No, because her son had the plane. You
right.
see Margaret with her son. The son is, they're walking through the desert because she thinks that there's something out there. The kid vanishes and everyone is like, oh, he's dead. But she comes back with the plane. Florence Pugh never sees her with that plane.
Right.
It would be one thing if Florence Pugh saw Margaret, like, staggering back from the desert, clutching this plane and being like, they took my son. And so Florence Pugh has in her head this red plane. So that way, when she sees the red plane flying, it's like, oh, this is her subconscious trying to be like, something's weird about this. You need to think about this more. But because she's never seen this red plane before, why is a plane just showing up in the middle of nowhere? I think the thing is, too, that's confusing with, is this Alice hallucinating or is this something that's actually there? She is only on the trolley with the guy driving the trolley, who
mm-hmm.
I guess is a simulation. We don't know.
That would be my best guess.
Right, okay. And so we know that because when she says, like, oh my God, there's a plane just crashed. He's like, what? I didn't see a plane. Where's the plane? We assume because he is a man and we have seen the first, like, 20 minutes of this movie, that one way or another, a man would lie to her and be like, even if their plane was there, the man would be like, no plane. What are you talking about,
right.
crazy lady? If she was there with one of the other women and one of the other women was like, I didn't see a plane. What are you talking about? Then you could be like, this is in Margaret's head. But the fact that it's a man and not a woman is the thing that makes me think, okay, I can't tell for sure if this is something that's actually that she actually saw and he's lying to her, or if it's just in her head and he's saying no because it's just in her head.
It's a good thing the mystery of the plane is just sort of dropped.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a good thing this never comes up in a meaningful way ever again.
Pretty shortly
except
after.
To, like, confuse
yeah.
us.
We're spending, like, 5 minutes on a plane that doesn't matter,
no.
but it is just, like, it's emblematic of, like,
a lot of issues.
The kind of event that happens in this movie that make you go, why was that there? What
right.
was it for?
Well,
right.
a lot of these events don't go anywhere. They just seem to be there for weirdness's sake. This is sort of reminding me of when we watched Mothman, where it's just weird shit happens for no reason.
That's fair, yeah.
But it's funny. At least Mothman, he gets a phone call at 3 a.m.
Wondering, asking him to... Like,
and
he's
then he
chapstick.
Throws the phone across the room.
Right.
And it's like...
The other thing I would say, we'll go into this, I'm sure, at some point, one way or the other, but I am so confused by the fact that Olivia Wilde specifically says at the end, when you, like, kill a man in the simulation, they die in real life. Now, she says, when you kill a man. She does not say when you kill a person. So, to me, that implies just the men. just the men die for some reason when you kill them. If you kill a woman in the simulation, they don't die. But so what happens to Margaret?
I don't necessarily think that's the takeaway.
I don't think it's the takeaway either, but I think it's weird that she specifies when you kill a man instead of when you kill someone.
I think it's just like, why would she kill another woman? We're all victims.
Or I would also point out that I just figured it was like when people say mankind, they technically mean...
Sure. When you kill mankind in the simulation.
This movie makes me feel like I'm CinemaSins, which I hate, but dang. They're both... In the scenes, the brief scenes that we get outside of the simulation, both Alice and Jack are wearing the same eye sets. I think the only difference is she's always plugged into hers and he's not.
Yes, I think that's true.
So it does not track for me that a woman wouldn't die in that situation.
No, I agree. I agree because I think that that's an insane thing that only men would die if you kill them. I'm just and I'm fully willing to believe that that is not true. That if you killed a woman in this world, she will die in real life too. I just think it's insane that all Olivia Wilde says is when you kill a man.
I think that it's just Olivia Wilde. I think there are some journeys I will go with you, Brendan, mm-hmm. and some I'm going to be like, you're reading too much into this line. She just says man because she has just killed someone who is a man. And it would be absurd in this scenario to be talking about killing women because in this world, all of the women are prisoners.
Except for Olivia Wilde, though, who is there voluntarily.
She's kind of the
in which case, a great argument for her to deflect away from implying that you can kill Olivia Wilde.
I suppose, but then what happens if one of you just tries
to stab
her for
funsies? I would also point out that it is an insane rule of this world to drop in the final 15
would agree.
Minutes.
I don't
a rule that if you die in the game, you die in real life.
Yeah, well, because this is some... Never on M Street drops that rule on you pretty soon into the proceedings. You die in the dream, you die in real life.
I don't understand how that works.
I don't either. That makes no sense to me. On top of that, too, so it's like because your brain dies in the simulation, that causes your brain to die in reality.
He's not bleeding.
Right.
Like, I just don't understand, what happened to you? Is it, the shock of you dying in the game just causes, instantaneous death?
He didn't experience head trauma in the real world.
Right.
Is it, such realism that,
it just tricks
his brain
right, it literally, tricks your body to be, I'm dead now, and you die? The other thing I would say on top of that is, okay, let's assume that that is true. If you die in the simulation, you die in real life. In the beginning, you have... Everyone seems to be running around drinking constantly. Harry Styles and Florence Pugh are driving through the desert doing donuts. That seems like a bad idea. If you know that you can die in real life if you die in the simulation, why would you go out drunk driving after the fact? Now, I guess we could argue, does alcohol have an effect in the simulation? Maybe
Who
it
knows?
Doesn't. Maybe it's less of an effect.
Honestly,
I don't know.
That would be pretty funny because they did. I mean, it is when you watch Mad Men, I know that's the 60s and not the 50s per se, but they're always drinking fucking fish all the time. And that would just be funny that the only way that would work is if you're in a simulation where alcohol has no effect on you. But then...
That would be first of all, you would never accept that because you know these men want to get drunk.
Right.
True.
So, clearly they can get drunk, but maybe they don't get as drunk.
Oh,
I don't know.
And I think that's the thing. I just think, then my other question would be, do the men know this? Maybe the men don't know that if you die in the simulation, you die in
real
life.
Maybe. How the fuck does Olivia Wilde know?
Right. That's a great question, too.
Especially
where did this come from?
Especially since her husband, Nick Kroll, seems to be a big old doofus.
Yeah.
So the movie gives me nothing to, but this is, I feel like we're all kind of dipping into Lee's shtick of extrapolating on the movie's behalf. What if she was the last woman to challenge Chris Pine and in whatever
when you
weird
say
power,
she even Olivia Wilde.
Before Alice comes along and in their power struggle that was revealed to her. And then the thing that maybe got her to stay was, hey, look, your kids are dead in real life, but I can give you children here.
Sure. I could believe that. And I think, again, this speaks to the narrative stupidity of saving all this information
for
the last 20 minutes.
This movie is just rife with shit that makes no sense and shit that is there's shit that makes no sense. And then there's a step worse, which is this is bad. Why is there a method in your simulation for women to leave the simulation?
That's the thing too.
Can just walk out.
Right. Why are there not armed guards standing around this building all the time?
Why is the building there?
Right.
There shouldn't be
So here's the thing. Do you want to know the other thing too? And I won't keep doing this because I don't want to be like this guy, but in the script that I read, the portal, the exit portal that the Jack analog uses changes based on where he wants it to be. So she finds out
that
about
makes way more sense.
She finds out about this because she sees his car parked outside a motel and she's like, is he having an affair? And so she goes into the door that it's parked out, and then she wakes up in the real world. And then later Jack admits that, like, oh, I changed it to be in a different place.
I
want to
see this movie.
That.
I was just like,
this makes a lot more sense that, like, the men control where it is. Instead of it having be a base in the middle of a desert, protected by nothing, guarded by no one, that you just have to touch hard in order to escape.
Well, because then also, if it's a simulation, you don't even need to make them scared to go out. Just make it impossible.
Yeah. Like, there's just, again, maybe Chris Pine is just bad at this. Maybe that's, like, the secret moral of this movie.
We have fucking ample proof of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if there's a way for you to get out of the simulation, it shouldn't be because there's just de facto a door that women can choose to walk through.
Right. That's bad planning.
One other thing I just wanted to point out, that if this is so minor, but whatever. When we see the scene where in real world Harry Styles is like, you know, putting on the eye thing, and he's like, yeah, like a strange little rat creature. I cannot get over the hair. Anyway, as soon as he plugs in, then the weird like zombie Busby Berkeley thing starts up, and it's like projected on the inside of their like weirdo canopy bed. And why is that the thing? Where did the Busby Berkeley thing even come from?
Again, I know I said this. I don't understand it because Busby Berkeley is sort of a 20s and 30s aesthetic. This movie, while not hewing closely to 50s and 60s, like, I don't think this movie, this is one of those things where like you can't look at something and be like, well, actually, they didn't have X in the
50s. No, that's not what I'm trying
because,
to say.
No, I know. And I understand that. But I'm saying that like this movie is trading so heavily in mostly 50s and 60s aesthetics that when it throws this in, I'm just like, why this?
And even just beyond that, what was the function? Because I know that they tie that to sort of, they kind of connect that visually and through implication to Gemma Chan's weird
dance
ballet modern dance right. studio
geometric walking
where they're always doing like eye-shaped circulars and whatnot, but I don't know what that even amounts to because
there's grace and symmetry.
Okay.
What's the other line? It was
there's
like
there's grace and symmetry, we all move together
there is
something and something
there, it's really like some brainwash, some classic brainwash.
Okay. No, yeah, it is,
but why would you need that if they're already physically strapped into the simulation?
I don't understand the point of showing any of that. And again, if you're going to Ludovico technique these women, which they're kind of doing, you would think that they would just show them images that are pertinent to the world that they're
Somebody
living in.
Somebody should have watched the Parallax View. Sounds like
good movie.
Yes, they should have watched the Parallax View. Same director as Clute.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's all in the episode.
Your favorite movie, Clute. Yeah.
Cluteverse.
The Cluteverse.
You love the expanded Cluteverse.
And okay, just while we're on the Gemma Chan for a second, what the fuck? I mean, I know we'll get into this.
I don't,
There's a turn at the end, just putting aside who she is as a character, which is sort of whatever.
I think there's a window open for Gemma Chan to complain about being like sort of racially stereotypically cast as some sort of like exotic Asian.
I would agree.
She barely speaks.
Right.
And then she stabs him in the end.
Yeah.
And then says it's my turn.
Yeah.
And I would think so. Like, first of all, I think there is a world where if you've done this better, you can make a point where Gemma Chan is like he's like a racist fuck who hates women, but also like he has an Asian woman. Like she's like his, like he's showing her off because she's so exotic and beautiful.
And
right.
Demure.
Right.
And
exactly. So it's like in a world, I can see that being why it's Gemma Chan.
And you can also, I mean, again, I'm giving this movie something it's not, doesn't have on its own, but if this is generally just meant to riff on the incels of, I guess, the future today or whatever, it's a very real thing, these guys that think if they just get, like, a foreign submissive Asian woman as their wife, like, oh, everything will be just fine.
Mm.
I mean, you could have taken it in that direction, and that could have been some salient criticism, but they don't do anything with it.
I mean,
and then we're supposed to believe at the end that she's been this character who's been, like, looking to take over the whole time?
Right.
Like,
okay, so here's... I'll just do a quick sidebar before I jump into... This movie doesn't deal with race in any concept.
No.
There are a few characters of color who the movie doesn't really have a whole lot of time for.
Yeah, it's not addressed ever.
Right.
Like, they don't treat them any... There's, like, no discussion.
Right. It's one of those things where, like, we're ostensibly living in a 50s, 60s
nobody
world.
Nobody sees color.
Yeah, exactly. But no one's like, oh, there are black people moving into the neighborhood. I don't know how I feel about that. There is a universe where this movie could be dealing a little bit more more with women of color, mm-hmm. instead of just approaching it from a sort of basic white
feminism
sort of way. I don't really want to talk about that because I'm not equipped to talk about that, but I'm just throwing that out there. The Gemma Chan thing, though, so I don't understand who she is fucking at all by the end of this.
Either.
When she says, like, "You stupid man, it's my turn now," is she saying, one, I have the same beliefs as you, but I'm killing you because I think I could do this better than you do, a la Glenn Close in the Separate Lives?
I was just about to say.
Right. Two, is it that she's woken up somehow from her conditioning because she's hearing all this and she's saying, like, "You stupid man, it's my turn now. Like, I'm going to turn this into, like, my version of utopia where the women are the one calling the shots and the men are submissive cucks." Or is she saying, "I'm going to wake up in the real world and fucking hunt you all down and kill you?"
Maybe.
I don't know what she's saying in the scene. It's just, like, a twist for the sake of there being a, like, yeah, fucking stab that guy,
because,
girl.
To Leah's point, she, what, I think for the entire movie has five lines?
Yeah, she has, like, a big, she like, defends her husband at the dinner.
Right.
She says a few things in the dance studio.
Right.
Yeah.
Just she's, like, instructions.
Yeah.
Chin up.
Yeah. Belly in. Yeah.
Belly in.
Yeah. She's almost like a non-entity of a character up until this. So, like, the point when
But she's treated like some weird cult leader.
Right, right. Everyone's sort of like, it almost seems like everyone's, like, afraid to talk to her.
Yeah, she comes in. There's a, like, a Florence Pugh looks, like, scared of her.
Right, yeah. When
she
comes into the dance studio, everyone, like, falls silent.
Yeah.
This woman is clearly, like, in a position of power over these other women. We don't really go into any of that.
I guess if this movie wanted to bite the Stepford remake even more, they would have had a gay male character who gets...
That's true.
Like, there would be a Roger Bart who
gets Don't Worry, Darling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any other parts of this world we wanted to kind of pick at a little?
I mean, so much, but what else?
Well,
we've tunneled.
I have, like, one last thing I will say about this world. I find the 50s, 60s aesthetic, while very beautiful, fun to look at. Mm-hmm. I love mid-century modern architecture and aesthetics. Mm. I think it's great.
Looks great.
The thing that I find profoundly weird about this is that we're just using this as the sort of, this is what we associate with womanhood being restrained because they're living in this sort of, like, even, like, in the 70s Stepford Wives, it's sort of like a trip back to the 50s.
A gilded cage.
Right, where the women are all wearing, like, 1950s. So it's like they're using the aesthetics of the 50s and 60s because we as viewers know that this is cinematic language to show us that actually women are repressed in this society. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's there. Now, the thing that I find profoundly weird is all of these men are on board with the 50s, 60s aesthetic. None of them are like, "I would like a TV or a computer so I can play video games." They're all just willing to go along with this because all they care about is subjecting women to their whims.
I suppose.
That I just am sort of confused. If you wanted to, like, go really nuts, this world could be complete nonsense from the start, where it could be almost like a patchwork world. One person lives in, like, a mid-century modern 50s style house, and their neighbors are present day, and someone else is the 1800s or something, like in a Victorian mansion next door. You could make this completely insane from the start to the point that, like, you as a viewer are like, "I don't know what the fuck is even happening right now, but I want to watch to understand why." And so I think it's really weird that every man is like, "Yep, 50s, 60s, I'm okay with it and don't want to deviate with that at all."
I guess it's gotta be, I mean, it has to be, like, they're all drinking Frank's Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I assume
the guy.
Right, because that is the way it is with so many of these men. What the alpha man says, you're going to be like, "Yes, that's good, that's what I want too." If he says, "This is the way the world should be," you're going to be like, "Yep, he's right."
Which they also don't do enough of it. I mean, there is that, like, dinner party scene where you specifically see the men, like, falling over themselves to endear themselves to him, and, "Oh, he's not wearing a tie," and they're all, like, ripping their ties off or whatever. It, like, happens in only, like, one scene, and it just feels like this movie, it had all these things they wanted to have happen, but they just didn't thread it throughout, isolated.
Yeah. The movie is generally doing this thing where it's both Chris Pine and Gemma Chan are, like, gods to these people, almost. Half the time it seems like they're kind of on the same level as them, and then half the time it's like, "Oh my god, I can't believe I'm in the presence of Chris Pine," you know?
Right.
In the beginning, at Chris Pine's house, it's like everyone's sort of there talking like they're all on the same level, but then whenever he shows up to the dinner party, the guys are like, "You got him to come to your house?"
I think it's like a very different story. Like, you go to his house.
Sure, I guess
he
so.
He doesn't come to yours.
Right, right. I'm sure that's probably it.
Yeah.
I just think that, like, the relationship between, like, these two characters and the rest of the world needed to make a little more sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, even if you saw, like, Gemma Chan walking through that, I don't know, hotel lobby shopping center that the gals were all in at the beginning, looking at the women modeling clothes. As Gemma Chan walks by, everyone just sort of, like, falls silent, like, "Oh my god, it's Gemma Chan walking the same..." That would at least give you something to be like, she's, like, on a level above them, and she doesn't even deign to speak to them outside of the dance studio or something. You know, like, I think there are things you could do that this movie just doesn't do.
Well, and I would say that this movie is at least wanting to tell a story that addresses misogyny, incels, the desire to, like, subjugate women, the desire to control them, limit them, own them.
Yeah.
It's fine if you want to tell a story that addresses all of that, but I just feel like, similar to its story choices, similar to its writing, it doesn't engage with those in anything more than, like, the most surface-level, root-one idea.
I mean, it's just like, what do you have to say about this at the end
exactly.
of the day? You're saying it's bad. I agree with you.
I agree!
It's bad. You're not going to have any arguments here. You need to say this in an interesting or unique or different way, and this is not doing it, because, again, this is literally the Stepford Wives. This is just the Stepford Wives with the Matrix thrown into it.
And just not as good.
Like, yeah. No, and I mean, because we've all lived in a world where the Stepford Wives exists, we watch this movie as soon as the cars start pulling out in unison at the beginning, and you catch the men driving through the desert being, woo, men driving! You're immediately, as a viewer, like, okay, something's wrong here. What's wrong with this world? Whereas, I promised I wouldn't do this, in the original screenplay, again, it is presented for the first 20 or so pages as almost a drama set in the 1950s, where it's just, this woman seems like she's mentally unwell, and the rest of the world, because it's the 1950s, are just like, oh, like, sweetie, let's just pump you full of pills and shut your cute little mouth up. But in reality, it's because of this. So, like, honestly, if this movie had played it straight for a little bit, and then was like, oh no, something's gradually going wrong here, there might be something to that, to developing that storyline, but the fact that it happens so quickly is just, what are we fucking doing here, guys? I'm worried, darling.
I'm so worried, darling. We kind of touched on a couple already briefly, but there were kind of isolated moments. I think I kept saying this, like, in a vacuum were, like, cool.
Sure.
So we just wanted to maybe name what a couple of those were. Like, I feel like we mentioned the eggs. That was a pretty, like, that's a cool moment.
I liked the eggs. I liked the wall and the window
squishing.
Loved the
wall smash.
I think that's fun.
I love the scene of her just wrapping her head
in saran wrap. Yeah, that was
good,
too.
And then the sound gets that, like, crinkly, distant. I thought that was a cool thing.
Yeah.
The way that you described it is those are the ones that are in a music video. It would come together to make a good music video.
It would. Because they are so isolated.
Yeah.
They're striking images. They're interesting in and of themselves. But is the movie using them to enrich the story? No.
Well, I mean, I think the movie is using them to enrich the story. The problem is the story is so flimsy that it doesn't do anything. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
Like, it's certainly, like, in a better scripted version of this, I could see those scenes amounting to something more. But the fact is, again, we're already so far ahead of the movie at this point that it's just, this is just weird for weird's sake at this point.
It does feel that way.
Yeah.
Or the scene of, like, she sees Margaret kind of approaching
the
mirror
wall. Right.
Smashing her
head. I mean, I feel like that whole sequence to me is very strange. I know that she's kind of hallucinating, I guess, and she's seeing Margaret in the mirror, banging her head against the mirror, which I guess it's like what Florence Pugh has to do at the end of the movie to escape Manosphere that she finds herself
in. The Manosphere!
But
escape the Manosphere.
Escape Florence Pugh.
Escape from the Manosphere.
Escape from the Manosphere. But then you see her standing on the top of her house and she cuts her throat with a knife and then jumps off the house, which is a little overkill, but whatever. I almost feel like it would be a better sequence if she just showed up to the ballet class looking sort of manic and all the other women were like, oh, what is she doing here?
And then
she
really
whips out the knife and slits her own throat in the middle of the ballet class. All the women kind of freak out. She has other women seeing it. And then when the husbands are later telling, like, no, she didn't really injure herself that bad. Like, yeah, okay, she hurt herself a little bit. She's okay. And all the other women can be like, I guess my husband's right. They probably are okay. And Florence Pugh can still be like, we saw her. We saw this happen to her. And then just have all the women be like, they're saying she's fine. What are you on about?
That would be 1,000% more interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just spitballing.
Any other moments we wanted to highlight?
I mean, the cinematography, I think, is good.
Yeah.
The visuals are good.
Like you said, it's a good-looking movie.
It's a good-looking movie.
Yeah.
I like mid-century modern. Palm Springs looks very nice.
The costumes looked great.
Yeah.
The hair looked great.
All of the women look good. Like, they were women who work very well with this sort of aesthetic.
Lord knows they didn't get to use their acting chops very much, but they cast people who had, I think, faces that worked for the period.
Yeah, I agree.
Caperland, especially Olivia Wilde. I know she's the director, so I guess she cast herself, but especially that lady who I recognized from that Alien series.
Yeah, I forget her name.
Also looked great. Anyway, before we dive into actors
Sydney
and characters.
Chandler.
Thank you, Sydney Chandler. Before we dive into actors and characters, we gotta talk about the music. And by that I mean the constant needle drops.
Right. This truly is like the greatest hits of the 50s and 60s. Olivia Wilde just...
You're at like on a 90s
or like a Sean on
television.
Right, or Olivia Wilde saw like the infomercial for like the greatest needle drops of the 40s, 50s, and 60s and was like, ooh, dial
there
that
we go.
One up, get their soundtrack.
Life could be a dream.
Yes. Some might say that there is too many songs in this movie, which I get.
It's ham-handed, it's ham-fisted, it's heavy-handed, it's heavy-hammed. It's
ham-fisted, ham-handed, heavy-hammed.
It's ham-hammed.
Ham-heavy.
It's ham-hammed, fist-fisted.
Yes, fist-hammed.
Honestly, especially in the beginning, it's just one after the other after the other, and they're all very on the nose.
Right, and it's also just one of those things where, like, you have to let us breathe a little bit. You have to let the silence or the lack of music speak a little bit. It seems like they're a little worried that the...
Darling.
I'm worried, darling, that the aesthetics or tone are not conveying what they should convey. So they're like, well, dump in some era-appropriate music just to really...
Shows a real lack of confidence. I was honestly surprised that as Florence Pugh escapes the manosphere, they didn't play You Don't Know Me. You know what I mean?
It does feel like that was a missed opportunity on someone's part to not dump that in.
Well, it just feels like it would have been characteristic.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Every other emotional beat was spelled out in an incredibly on-the-nose song.
Like, shit, why let the score do the heavy lifting now? You haven't let it do the heavy lifting for the rest of the movie.
Right.
I mean, the score is fine. It's a lot of... It is, like I had said earlier, the feminine equivalent to King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, where it's a lot of, like...
I think when...
I liked that, though, in the suicide scene.
I think it can be effective, but again, it's just... That's kind of all you're getting.
That and, like tones.
Yeah.
When they're arguing about her working a 30-hour shift, and he's like, well, I want to have sex or whatever.
Well, he wants her to cook or whatever.
They should drop
No, he wants her to have sex. He's mad that she didn't...
She didn't want to have sex.
Right, because he's mad that she didn't respond to his text asking what she wanted for dinner, so he didn't have dinner. But then as soon as she comes in and, like, starts washing her hands, he's like, nah, let's have sex. And she's like,
I'm tired, I have to go to sleep.
And he's like, ooh.
Trying to make a living. And then they shoot a needle dropped in the beat, the riff from the Keira Knightley movie. Burn it.
Trying to make a
Domino.
Yeah, Domino.
Put the fucking weapon down. whatever she wags him with the snifter or whatever. Hey, you never cure it at least.
Put the fucking weapon down.
Oh my god. Yeah, this could have really used some Domino. Could you imagine if, like, she wakes up in the real world and it's all that
yellow?
Like.
So bright.
So let's jump into actors and characters.
Sure.
I think it is only fair that we start with Alice, played by Florence Pugh. I don't think this is a controversial opinion. I think she is great.
Yeah, I like Florence Pugh a lot. I think she is very good in this, despite, you know, the script's best efforts to prevent her from being interesting.
Yes.
And again, we didn't really want to talk about, like, the behind-the-scenes drama that this movie had. It seems like this was not, suffice to say, a fun shoot for most people.
To sum this up very, 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 very quickly, it appears that during the shooting of this film, Olivia Wilde and Harry Styles had a little bit of a thing, and it led to somehow Shia LaBeouf's character also kind of getting
scooted
out.
So it was supposed to be, Shia LaBeouf was originally playing the Harry Styles role.
Right.
Yeah.
And there were some, the affair could not have had anything to do with that, because that would not have happened obviously until Harry Styles joined the movie. But what I believe happened was probably just the fact that, as I think most people knew at the time, Shia LaBeouf, while not being an untalented actor, is also, like,
nuts.
Yeah, also kind of nuts. Also probably not someone you should have hired in the first place, because we all knew this going in. But I digress. It seems that she wanted to keep Shia LaBeouf on to the point that she was siding with him
against
Florence Pugh.
In a dispute,
was what I heard.
Because apparently Florence Pugh felt unsafe with him.
Right. There was a voicemail message that leaked where Olivia Wilde was basically talking to Shia LaBeouf and being like, don't worry about her. Like, I've got your back on this. Which obviously, like, as an actor, would not make you feel great to hear that, like, your director was like, no, let me side with this fucking lunatic. So then obviously Harry Styles joins the cast instead. There is some kind of affair happening between Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde, which is also a little weird too, because, like, she's the director again, and you, like, this is bad if it's a man doing it, it's bad if it's a woman doing it. You shouldn't be doing it while the movie is happening.
Absolutely.
You keep it in your pants until the movie has ended, and then you act on it and see what happens.
It is, I think, commendable and very admirable that Florence Pugh turned in probably the best performance in this movie, despite all of these things arrayed against her.
Right, yeah, it seemed like it must have been a miserable experience, is all I can say, and maybe she channeled that misery into her character.
Also, she does one hell of a convincing as fuck American accent.
She does.
I think she's always
been pretty good at that, I think. The thing that I find weird about her character is, again, and this is something we've talked about before with characters, I don't understand why she's with Harry Styles in the first place. Maybe part in the real world, I mean, in reality. And maybe this is more to do with Harry Styles' character, which we'll go into. I don't understand why she's shackled herself to this guy, because I don't know anything about him. The only things I do know about him is that, like, one thing goes wrong and he descends into, like, right-wing misogyny almost instantly. Which feels like, to me, a bad trait.
And pretty facile, yeah. Also, just from a storytelling perspective.
Right. It's one of those things that makes you question her logic a little bit, and, like, that could be something that maybe you want to deal with if you have a movie where she breaks into reality and finds out what's going on at the end of Act One. Then you can sort of deal with the fact, like, oh, why does this woman, who seems like she has her shit together, has a good job, is capable, likes her job, why does she stay with, like, this fucking dumbass man baby who just sits at home and complains all the time?
Mm.
Like, maybe that's something you could explore a little bit, but, you know.
Because he gives good head.
Yeah, that's right, because he eats her out every night.
All incels wish to do.
She, like, comes back home.
In pleasure.
She comes home after working at the hospital, and he's like, you didn't tell me what you wanted to eat tonight, so I'm going to tell you what I want to eat tonight.
Oh, no.
And she's just like, oh my God, 30-hour shift, stop,
no.
Please, please, I beg of you.
Oh my God.
Good Lord.
Oh man, you needed to be in the writer's room for this one.
I know, could have really plussed up that script. And just as a minor thing, we don't know where Florence Pugh is in this movie. Nope. When they show her chained to the bed or whatever. Do her parents think she's dead? Like, what do her friends, colleagues, and family members think? Do they not, like, and again, as much as I said I wouldn't do this, in the script, they also say that there is a means to faking the person's death so that you can keep them locked up in this space. Right, and so that's what I'm saying. Like, I expected to hear this thing where it was when you hear Tim Simons doing all the voiceover explaining, like, all this shit, that he was going to be like, all right, and here's your kit for faking your loved one's death and how to keep them, you know, here's some fake blood.
Here's like, I left the death certificate blank, but I signed
right.
it.
Exactly.
Whatever you need.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Here's her suicide note. She killed herself. It's great. Keep moving on. When these things, like, start to pile up, you just can't help but ask these questions, like, where do people, like, what do people think happened to her? I don't know.
I guess we'll move on to Harry Styles next as Jack.
He's flat,
yeah,
is the best I can say.
Yeah,
was he supposed to? I'm very confused.
Yeah,
when he was out of the
is this about the accent?
He's supposed to be American in real life, British in the
yes.
simulation.
So what I almost
said, American accent
right
in subtitles.
Yes. Yes, because it does say in the subtitles when he's in real life, it says, like, American accent before he starts talking.
Which, and I'm like,
totally,
that's not what I was hearing.
Which
the whole
totally,
yeah.
Which totally feels like a cheat because they were, I think.
Well, no, the thing
he
that.
Just,
the
he probably
thing,
couldn't sustain
the
it.
The thing that I think was a cheat was when you have Tim Simons doing voiceover and he's like, oh, chosen nationality for the simulation, British.
Well,
because they knew that
I
he could not sustain this.
No, but because I think they had to write that in.
I think, no, and I think that was something they probably did after the fact.
Yes.
They were like, oh,
yeah.
He's really.
That wouldn't be a problem with Shia LaBeouf. That'd be so funny, though, if that was actually written to the character. And they're like, actually, we need to let Shia go because his British accent is really bad.
Oi, Florence! I'm gonna eat you out, then. Oh,
God. Let me get at them old fish and chips, eh? Anyway.
I don't understand that part at all. To be quite clear.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, this is gonna sound weird. I've never really heard Harry Styles speak aloud.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
Movie.
Yeah, I don't know that I ever have either, honestly.
And I guess I know logically he is British, but I just didn't really hear much of an accent from him in general. And so when it said American accent, I was like, that's not what was happening the whole time.
I think he's trying to repress it through in the simulation world. I think Harry Styles, the actor, is trying to sound American or at least Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, I
but
just
not
thought,
doing
he,
a great
I thought
job
he was doing
it.
Like a 50s voice, and I was like,
Do you think?
I just thought he was playing American the whole time.
Do you think
he was playing
in the
British.
Script that he's American all the way through, and then they put the movie together and they're like, fuck. His British accent totally slips out in this scene, this scene, this scene, this scene, and this scene. How do we fix this? Hey, Tim?
No,
can you step into the ADR?
That's what I
please?
Said. I unequivocally think that's what happened.
Okay.
I almost, like, it could also be like the simulation is glitching because your husband is speaking with an English accent.
Which, does the accent change?
I would love if all of a sudden he starts speaking. She's like, I'm sorry, what's this? Where is this
or
coming from?
Sometimes he speaks in Japanese.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes
she, like, hits him with on the head and he starts speaking in German or something, like,
yeah.
No.
That would be the comedy version of this. That would be if you really took it in a Truman Show.
Yeah, I just
wanted to note two things about his character.
Yeah.
This isn't really down to the performance. The performance is whatever. He's not an actor. I don't want to be mean. He's just not an actor.
Yeah.
But just obsessed with the wig that he wears in the
his rat boy wig.
The
yeah.
rat boy wig. Obsessed that they basically were
it's
just like
multiple wigs too, because it gets they show the length.
Like the progression, right.
Yeah, the progression of Vincelis.
And I just love, how do we make him really gross? We're just gonna give him, like, pimples?
wrinkles.
Right. He's got a little bit of like acne on the side of his face.
They do a really good job of like their sort of receding awful hairline.
Yeah, they do make his hairline look much shittier than it does in reality.
And it really just makes me hope that all of the men are like little rat creatures in reality. Just the other one I just wanted to shout out, I still don't understand what the dancing was on stage during the Great Gatsby party.
I mean,
that's the weirdest scene.
No, it is, because it's like, I guess it's just supposed to be that like Chris Pine can tell you what to do and you'll
and
do,
you do it.
He says jump, you say how high,
but
right? But it goes on. You cut back to her, to Olivia
like
Wilde and Florence Pugh in the bathroom, and you cut back again, and Chris Pine is still being like, look at him dance. Are we enjoying him dancing? I'm like, no, I'm not enjoying him dancing. I'm worried, darling. Make him stop.
The look on his face, and then his physicality is so stiff and jerky when he's dancing, to the point where I think we all kind of said a version of this, where it looks like someone has, like, cast a spell on
him. Yeah, it looks like he's being controlled by Chris Pine.
Someone, like, cast Dominate Person.
Or it's, like, from Stardust, where, like,
right, she has, like, the voodoo doll.
Body.
Yeah, like, Chris Pine has a voodoo doll in his pocket of Harry Styles. It's like, doop-doop-doop-doop-doop.
Better movie, by the way, if that's what...
Your messages when you were watching it were like, I'm trapped watching this... Help Chris, when does he stop dancing?
No, it was, because like he just wouldn't stop dancing. Why won't he stop dancing, Chris?
Oh my god, there was a move, I don't want to dwell on this for too much longer, but there was a move where he like is sort of, I don't know how else to describe
it. Let's do
it. He sort of puts his arms in like a circle.
Okay.
And is sort of doing like this.
Look at him dance.
And
look at him dance,
it
folks.
It was just so weird to see him do these like...
Do some flips for us,
like,
Chris.
Strange,
it did
look awkward...
like a monkey did.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
And like
just,
that's the thing, like, is this supposed to be humiliating,
and
I guess?
And then to Chris Pine being like, this is entertainment, huh? And
yeah.
Like, is it?
And
yeah.
Yeah, one
point
says, let's see him spin.
Right.
It's
just...
I don't know.
I see, again, it must be humiliation or something, but it's just such a bizarre moment where, like, it's not surreal enough to be weird.
No.
But, like, it's just weird.
It's just,
like, goofy.
It's just weird.
I just want to throw... So this is what I want to throw out here, because I wrote, like, this little screed real quick about Harry Styles.
Okay.
And I will just blast through here.
Let's do it.
Why is she married to him?
Don't know.
What was he like before? What was his job? Could they have worked something about why he lost his job? Maybe something that would explain his descent into shittiness. Why is she even with this guy as it is? Because in the movie, all you can tell is that he's some kind of loser who was fired and now is terminally online and feels emasculated, but he managed to find a job that pays enough money to afford to keep his wife in a virtual simulation that he hates, yes, in a very expensive simulation without her earning money any longer. Couldn't he have just found a job and assumed his like rightful role as head of the household? Why didn't he just take whatever job it is he's doing now to be like the head of the household at that point? And if there's supposed to be an irony here, and I think there might be, like, I'm not going to discount that, where the man will suddenly find the encouragement to do all this shit just to like disenfranchise his wife, but not enough just to become like the man in real life. The movie doesn't do enough with it.
Nope.
So like, I think that could have been a plot point where it's just, you only stepped up to the bat and found this job when it would allow you to subjugate your wife, but you wouldn't do it in any other time. Like, I think that's an irony you could have fun with, but again, because all this comes out at the end of the movie, we don't have time to deal with any of
it. I would also argue his murder is kind of anticlimactic.
Sure.
It's just like,
she just hits him with the glass and then he's dead.
No.
Yeah.
I guess we go to Chris Pine next as, what's his name?
Frank. That Frank. Yeah. I
basically
like him.
He's like the Jordan Peterson type.
I like him.
I do too. I mean, I like Chris Pine.
Yeah.
He's a likable actor.
I think the movie, I think, effectively weaponizes his, like, sort of innate charm
mm-hmm.
in a good way. I like in theory, the scene with him and Florence Pugh at dinner, where they're sort of having, like, a back and forth sort of thing. But as I said when watching it, the problem is that at any given point, while Florence Pugh can be making these compelling points about being like, hey, it's weird that we all have like the same backstory, right? At any point, then Chris Pine can just be like, boy, you're as crazy as that other woman who was crazy. And all the husbands will just be like, yes, she is. And then all the wives will be like, oh, she is, isn't
it's
she?
It's also bananas that he implies they had an affair. That came out of nowhere.
Right. Well, again, I'm still not sure, because when I first saw it, when he says, as you
I
were in the bedroom,
bedroom,
in my bedroom, which I assumed when I first saw it meant that scene where where Florence Pugh and Harry Styles are having sex in Chris Pine's bedroom for some weird ass reason, he walks in, like, smiles at them and leaves. I assumed he was just saying that to embarrass her, to be like, remember like that time I caught you fucking in my bedroom? But the way Harry Styles looks at her whenever he says that implies as though he's saying, remember how we had sex that one time?
I know.
But then it's also weird that like
Harry Styles forgot that actually it was the two of them that had sex.
Yes.
Which is like weird. It's weird that he would act betrayed and shocked by that when it's like, no, that was you.
Right, that was you. You expect Florence Pugh to just like smack and be like, hey, he's talking about you and me, dumbass.
You dumbass.
Remember when we had sex on his dresser?
Remember when I said we shouldn't have sex in his fucking bedroom?
Right, and then you just kept pulling out my underwear and going for it? Yeah. That was that time, buddy. And again, if it was supposed to be implying that they had an affair, Gemma Chan doesn't give you like a reaction that implies my husband had an affair. Like, you think at the very least people should be like, wait, they had an affair and that would end the dinner party. But no one does. So I can only assume that he's trying to imply to her that one time I saw you fucking Harry Styles in my bedroom. But then Harry Styles' reaction is so weird.
I know.
Yeah.
Unless it's supposed to read as like, he saw us or whatever, but who knows. Hey, Olivia Wilde as Bunny, the next door neighbor slash best friend.
I like her.
I can't make heads or tails of the character.
I can't either.
This is like the biggest issue I have is that so she is willing to
what character can we?
Right. To be fair. True. I mean, Chris Pine, I guess.
So the Chris shit Pine, pretty straight.
Yeah, pretty straightforward shit.
And pretty straight.
So she is living in the simulation because in reality children are dead. Right. She knows that she's in the simulation. She's okay with it because her children are dead in real life. This is the only way she can spend time with her children.
Yeah.
She seems to at best tolerate her children. Anytime she sees them, she's like sort of reacting to them and just sort of like, oh God, these guys are back again. Hi,
like,
kids.
Playing
hi.
This like wry kind of sarcastic mother.
Right. Like you would think that if this is a simulation where the only reason that she's willing to be part of this is so that she can see her kids, she would be almost like a smothering mother to them. Anytime she goes out, she would like drag the kids along with her, and Florence Pugh would be like, don't you want to let them just play or something? She'd be like, no, I love the kids. But then of course that contrasts with her sort of jaded, sarcastic persona. So it's like that wins out, right? It's just strange to me that if this is the thing keeping her imprisoned in this world, why does it feel like she doesn't like these kids?
I don't know.
Maybe it's like she can be dismissive of the kids because she knows that they can't actually.
I guess that's true, right? Maybe like it's almost like she like got over it quickly and she has in her head that like, okay, we're okay now.
Yeah.
So I can sort of have a little fun with this now. Just one more thing on Olivia Wilde, because I think the turn that her character takes at the end
is crazy.
Yeah. So this is here's the thing. Okay.
Unearned even?
When did she find out that she was in a simulation?
I would love to know.
Was she always aware that she was in a simulation? Was she the one who wanted to be part of the simulation and maybe drag Nick Kroll along with her? Did she, like, isn't it shitty and not tragic for her to keep other women imprisoned in the simulation? Yes. Like, at this point, like, it's not like, oh, how sad, your children are dead and you're clinging to this memory of them. It's like, oh, no, you're actively participating in this now. So, like, I don't feel bad for you if you think about it for more than a minute because she's, like, engaged in all this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. She's, like, one of those women who vote for, like, far-right causes just because, like, they don't think it's affecting them too much, you know, right? Like, I don't care how this affects other women. I know that I'm going to be kind of okay here, so
it could be
cares?
An interesting angle to take on this character.
Wouldn't it be maybe more interesting if the simulation reveal for Alice happened at the end of Act 1, and then a subplot for the rest of the movie is Bunny trying to rationalize what she's doing, because then Alice knows, so Bunny knows that Alice knows. Bunny's trying to rationalize both herself and Alice why she's doing this and has to sort of reckon with the fact that, like, you are thinking about yourself. You're being fucking selfish here. Just because you want to be trapped in this world with your kids doesn't mean that all the other women should be too. They did not at all think for a minute about what this actually says about her character. They just wanted to be sort of like, oh, how sad. She's like a prisoner here as well by choice just because she loves her kids so much. But then it's like, no. Think about that for just 30 seconds more, and where does that take you?
It also just occurred to me that our main character is Alice and her best friend is a bunny.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely an Alice in Wonderland just bullshit. Sort of, yeah.
Bullshit.
You think?
Maybe just brief character notes. I would not have been surprised if Gemma Chan's character, Shelley, just like ripped her face off and was a robot because she really acts like one.
Yes. Or again, as we said, talking about the bus driver earlier, you rip off her clothes and it's just like arms floating with a head because there's like nothing.
There's nothing programmed.
Yeah, there's nothing programmed beneath her dress.
I really wish Nick Kroll and Caper Lant had more to do. I wish a lot of these.
I wish like almost everyone else had something more to do.
It makes the movie feel very bloated, but at the same time empty, strangely, because while it is populated with multiple characters, they're also nothing.
Well, and it's also just so weird because, like, there's a town here. There's a town that's that, like, has, like,
it's
a shopping
tiny
mall.
Whenever we see
but, like, that's... No, I know that's the thing, too, is because we see this, like, layout, and it looks like it's just a planned community, but there's also a trolley that takes them to a dance studio and a shopping mall or something, so, like, there must be more to this town that we just don't see. What is the rest of this town? How many of these women are simulations?
Listen,
how many of them are real women who are trapped?
They're working on getting more server farms built so they can expand the amount Kennedys of victory.
Yes. And also just like, we have to assume that in real life, victory is a secret, right? This is not something that people know about because people would be losing their shit if they found out that Jordan Peterson was keeping women virtually trapped in a hologram.
But if they zoomed out and showed that this was just like a consumer product in 2050, I'd believe that too. We know so little about
it. I guess
it's
just like,
it's also, there could be half and half where it's advertised. They keep that part hidden.
Or it's like unregulated.
Yeah.
So maybe there's like different pockets of this kind of bullshit all over. Again, we are coming up with, just sitting down here complaining
like,
about the movie, we're coming up with other ideas to expand this.
It is in the like voiceover bit from Dr. Collins' real, whatever the fuck his deal is.
Oh, right, Timothy Simons.
He says something about, you understand that by joining the Victory Project, you were not, like, you're under confidentiality, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So it is like you're not supposed to talk about Fight Club.
Right.
No, exactly. It just feels like this is such a difficult scam for these people to pull off that, like, I just don't understand how it can keep
going. Unless you can spend significant amounts of time outside of the simulated world, to me, in my suspended disbelief, impossible to accept. And the fact that that these women are not taken to a central facility and stored, that she's just
would have made so much more sense.
Just like in their
house?
Studio
apartment. They don't even know where she is.
Right.
So that when a woman escapes the simulation, as they apparently are just able to do, because if there's a door they can go
through. You have no control.
You don't even know where they are.
Right. Again, if we're being charitable, maybe Chris Pine knows their addresses, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he's the only one who does.
Maybe.
But still, what an insane security risk.
But a phone call is right. How close are they to the phone, to a computer?
Right. There's so much. Even if they woke up, you still have to like get people over to their address, grab this woman, stop her from doing anything. And like what? Like 30 minutes will have passed by the time you can have foot soldiers show up there? How?
Well, and, like,
it is terrible OPSEC.
For the couple that leaves pretty much at the beginning of the movie, Margaret, and I don't even know if we learned the husband's name.
I forget.
But so does that mean in reality, she is dead? And he's just not going to tell anyone about how his wife died?
I guess so, right?
What do they think? Because they haven't seen Margaret since they joined the Victory Project.
That's true.
Do
you know what I mean?
Her death
she already
been
is
faked.
Dead
yeah.
to them.
Yeah. So, like, again, this is just one of those things where, like, as soon as you start, like, raising these things, it's just, like, it's an avalanche of questions that are raised with this shit.
And there is no satisfaction to be had.
It's, like, the worst crocheted sweater by a five-year-old. It just falls apart.
Right. Give it one gentle tug.
Yeah.
The whole thing is
just like,
a pile of yarn.
Snap off this.
Yes, exactly.
Anything else we wanted to say about characters, the movie in general?
No, because I think we've covered everyone else. We've covered Gemma Chan elsewhere, so there's no need to talk about her again, I think.
Who would like to fix this movie first?
I can start, because this is relatively brief here.
Okay.
So
for Brendan.
Yeah. For by my standards, yes. This is only 3 pages of notes.
Oh, okay, great.
So look, the thing is, this movie either needed to have a more interesting, more focused, more surprising plot, or it needed to just coast entirely on vibes and weirdness.
Mm-hmm.
Either one of those, I think, would be completely viable. I'm going to say that I really don't know how to make this plot better, because as I said before, this plot is so basic, Route 1 Stepford Wives bullshit, that like I don't know how you can make Stepford Wives shocking in our current day, because we've already seen Stepford Wives, and that's a shorthand in our world. So if I was trying to make this plot a little bit better, what I would probably do is I would almost move away from the themes of this movie, and I would make it more about less misogyny and more about people who are feeling pain or disenfranchisement are easy to manipulate and control. So it paints it sort of with a wider brush than just like misogynists. I know that does not seem like what the creatives were interested in talking about, because I think that was really what they wanted to talk about, albeit badly. But I think that it's a better backbone for a movie like this, because I just don't know how to do the movie that they wanted to do. I think that can tie into Bunny's reason for wanting to stay here, because like maybe it's not just a town for shitty men by shitty men. Maybe it started out as just like a simulation, like a virtual reality, artificial intelligence simulation that anyone could live in. And that's why she chose to live there, because she wanted to be with the kids that she had who died in real life. But then gradually it became more and more awful and was taken over by shitty man, which is a metaphor for everything in reality right now. You could find out, I think, what's happening earlier on, and then have more of the movie dealing with trying to make sense of all of this shit, rather than like acting like it's a surprise when 90 minutes in they give you the ending and we're all supposed to pretend like we didn't imagine this like 30 minutes in. I think you could even have more fun with Chris Pine being more of a banality of evil thing. Like, maybe it's not like necessarily like he has deep-seated like right-wing beliefs. Maybe it's just like, no, I think it's fun to be like a jackass to people. I want to make people fucking miserable. I'm doing this because I can do this, not because I have beliefs dictating me.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, this is like being in control and like crushing all these people is amusing to me. So that's why I'm like taking control of this simulation. That's what I think I would do if I wanted to give it more of like an actual plot. If I wanted to have this more Coast on Vibes, I would say maybe it's consistently vague about whether Alice is mentally ill or if something is up. The world could basically be sort of patchwork world, like that thing I said before, because like if it's a simulation, it would be a patchwork because it's based on the whims of the men. If not, it's because she's like mentally ill and she's picking up on traits. For one, aggro neighbor is living in a cowboy world or something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Someone who's like polite and quiet is living in like a Victorian house or something.
Very HBO Westworld.
Right, like almost Westworld sort of bullshit. Sure. You could have an explanation for either way, that like maybe she is mentally ill and this is reality, but this is how she sees it, or maybe there is something weird going on here. And I think you could honestly end the movie without ever clearly saying one thing or the other. Like, I think that would make it at least more interesting. If you look at some of the shit we've done, like The Box or something, it's at least that's weird for weird's sake, you know? That's what this movie could use more of. It could use more weird for weird's sake. So even if you don't walk away from this with answers per se, you can at least walk away being like, well, I don't know what the fuck was happening, but it was certainly trying to say something.
Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
I'll go. Here it is.
And my thought is coming out of my mouth.
I'm not that interested in a lot of the... I mean, okay. One thing caught my interest about this movie, and I took that one thing, and it's pretty much a very different movie now, but you kind of caught on to it a little earlier. We're talking about, like, it would be an interesting irony to explore that the movie doesn't explore the idea that he is, like, miserable now because the fact that he had to get a job, that the thing that made him get a job was, like, to subjugate a woman and not just to, like, feel manly.
Right. To like just get a job to be a provider.
To feel good on his own.
Yeah.
But like to feel good about himself and to feel good about his masculinity, he had to subjugate a woman. I liked the bit of the movie where he's like yelling about how awful how much he hates doing what he does, and it made me wonder like what he has to do, because I have to imagine that like his life probably does suck pretty hard. Like, he has no social life,
right?
And it must be a really bad job, and it must be really expensive to keep this fucking charade up.
He has to catch a lot of rats to make it happen.
So it must be like a really shitty job that he has to do a lot of, or it's like a high risk job, right? Like, that's the two things. It's like some shitty job that's either going to pay you enough or you have to work long hours or do shitty things. And then you come home and you plug into the fucking Matrix and that's your life. And that's why you look like a little rat boy now. And you're all like, you know, scrawny and emaciated because you're not getting any exercise. Instead of this fucking 50s bullshit, it's solarpunk utopia versus cyberpunk dystopia.
Cool.
So instead of 50s post-war manufactured community, there's a colonization effort where people like sort of wake up they come down in like pods or whatever, and it's like, oh, hypersleep's over. You're here on the new colony, and it's this beautiful fucking paradise planet. And they're like starting anew, and it's, you know, this beautiful colony that's formed, and it's all like, you know, fresh, like, planet. There's nothing, you know, there's flora, fauna, there's no unspoiled by pollution, et cetera, et cetera. And what's really going on is that the world is like full-on cyberpunk hell. Whether or not it's like, let's say it's like a similar thing as now, where it's like there is a couple, and I think it could be just be like that it is just like hard to make a living, and everything is expensive, like food's at a premium, rent, like real estate's at a premium, and so they're both like living hard and it's rough. Maybe it did start from a similar place of like, she had a job and like he couldn't do anything for a while, and she was making herself miserable trying to keep both of them afloat. And I like the idea that this is maybe like some sort of MMO virtual kind of space that is like a corporation offers this. but it's like servers where, like, you know, people can have private servers of it. And some, you know, Frank-like individual comes to this guy with this, like, offer of this, like, server where not only do you, like, if you go to this server, we can, like, take your wife or your girlfriend and we can, like, make sure that she's happy and provided for there. But you have to do, like, you know, you'll have to, like, pay for it. And you know, there's this, you know, fill in the blank, like, risky, shitty, high-risk job or whatever that you have to do to be able to pay for it. And I want to focus more on, like, have it be about both of them and have to show, like, the things that he has to do and how, like, he's getting increasingly scammed and conned into, like, doing more and more crazy shit to sustain this life.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the idea that we stop seeing him as much in the real world, and that by the time we see him in the real world in the end where, like, she comes out, that, like, yeah, she's probably, like, atrophied a little bit, malnourished, but he's, like, fucked up, like like he's, like, maybe donated organs by this point just to, like, sustain this thing, just, like, the lengths that he has gone to, you know. And have it be like, yeah, he is undoubtedly a villain, but also the real villains are, like, the corporations,
right,
and the society that, like, the
preys
the
upon
structure
him.
That
yeah.
preyed upon him. That's my take on
yeah.
that.
That's Lee Dunhanty's You Should Worry, Darling.
You Should Worry, Darling.
There was, like, when we finally see Harry Styles in the real world, there was a part of you that was like, God, is he wearing, like, a fat suit or something,
right,
too? I feel like they showed a tremendous amount of restraint in not putting him in a fat suit to complete his uglification process.
That still happens now and again these days, but I you know, I'm probably wrong if I say this out loud, but I feel like we have mainly moved past that.
I don't know that we have, but
maybe I just hope that
we would all like to hope that. But
my fix is pretty simple. So I had two main inspirations for this. One was in, God help me, an episode of Black Mirror called, I think it's the USS Calypso? Callisto? Callisto. Actually, both of these inspirations were starring Jesse Plemons. And that one, Jesse Plemons is the only human inside of basically a Star Trek simulation.
Right, I've heard of this.
And it's from Christine Milioti's character's perspective, who is one of the creations of that simulation, who is basically rapidly gaining sentience and kind of, like, fights back against it, right? A movie he was also in with Jesse Buckley some years ago called I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Very similar deal. Jesse Buckley is basically playing a figment of his imagination who over the course of the movie is gaining more and more sentience and would like to break away from him. I would like to join that idea with what we have here in Don't Worry, Darling. The whole world, aside from not Harry Styles, is a simulation. It is an incredibly well-realized but locked-in simulation that he turns on and off for his own personal enjoyment. I think you can do a similar incel thing, because I think it's especially something that you could kind of riff on with how in our world right now people have AI girlfriends or whatever, and it can lead to, like, genuine psychosis, seemingly. Alice is beginning as this very idealized creation. Yes, it's whatever kind of 1950s, 60s pastiche world. I actually think making this a simulation that is purely just from this guy could give you license to sort of play fast and loose with what that could really end up looking like, because it's not meant to be an actual faithful recreation. It's sort of his vision of a past that was never really real, right? But I would like for her to gain more sentience, begin questioning this, and then sort of Ex Machina style. I don't know that I have an idea of, like, how she really leaves that world in a way that doesn't unmake her. But I am very interested in this idea of once she is able to grasp the idea of having a separate identity and a full sentient self separate from this guy who has basically just constructed her for his pleasure, moving beyond him. Mm-hmm. And if that means that she no longer exists, God, that's sort of nihilistic, but maybe she can be at peace with that.
Maybe it's preferable.
I don't think it's nihilistic.
Yeah,
I mean, it is nihilistic, but people associate nihilism with, like, I don't know, being a downer. And
right.
I think that's just, like, the freedom of choice.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you discover the ability to free yourself from this situation, even if that freedom is non-existent,
wouldn't
that
you
is a
do
choice
it?
You can
yeah,
make.
Right.
And shouldn't she be free to make that
yeah,
choice?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we wrap up entirely, would you recommend?
No.
No.
It's long. It's so long, you're so ahead of everything that the movie is doing, and even though there are some fine performances and it's good looking, I can't imagine watching 2 hours of this.
I can't either.
That makes sense.
It's
yes.
why it's why I think if you were to just super cut this out into a music video.
Right.
Perfect.
And again, this is why Twilight Zone episodes are 30 minutes long.
Right.
Because, like, you cannot sustain this
can't,
shit.
Can't stretch
right.
it.
Right. You cannot take something this simple and stretch it out to 2 hours.
We wouldn't inflict this on our loved
ones.
No.
No. I would worry, darling.
That that's all I think there is to be said about Don't Worry, Darling. We are sufficiently worried about it.
The original script does have a title drop, by the way.
Oh, it does?
Yes.
Why did they not do that?
No, they didn't have the balls.
Yeah, I know.
Hey,
I know.
They didn't have the ovaries.
DraftPack.com, that's our website. We're on all of the basic podcast streaming apps, you know, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, all that sort
again,
of crap.
Once again, check out the truly amazing chapter titles that Spotify's AI chops our
episodes into. It's a lot of fun.
I have actually occasionally just watched the live, like, words that will pop up in, like, a weird video. It's strangely satisfying. Anyway, come back in 2 weeks where we'll have a mini, announce our next movie, and talk about The Drink. But for now, I think we're gonna buy this one out. Bye!
Bye.